You're listening to Our Backyard, KXRW.LP Vancouver on 99.9 FM and streaming everywhere at KXRW.FM.
We're doing a show.
that's what they pay us or don't pay us. So. That's what we volunteer our time to do.
That is what we volunteer our time to do. We're really lucky today because we have two amazing people that are going to help talk about the history of Patty Houck, who is was a local educator for many years and namesake for the Houck neighborhood and the Houck school. And yeah, we're going to learn some history about Patty Houck himself from one of our guests. And the other guest is going to tell us about how the legacy of Patty Houck continues on through the Houck Foundation and other people who have helped establish that great organization. Really excited.
That'll be awesome. And for those who have maybe not been to the Houck neighborhood, would you like to direct them on where to go so they can go experience that?
Yeah, if you go up Main Street and it's right about where 20th is at, it's where you can get into the neighborhood. It actually goes all the way down to Mill Plain and then up to 4th Plain. I was going to say 24th. I'm using our 26th. I'm using old school numbers. And the Houck neighborhood is the only neighborhood in Clark County that is designated as a historic neighborhood through the Washington State Heritage Register. A group of people, Mina, who's one of our guests, was a part of that effort. And then the Houck school actually bears Patty Houck's name. And there was a pool also and all that connection. And every year the community does this amazing parade that is a staple of the community. Everybody looks forward to it. And as we will see in our interview, it's not happening again this year.
Right.
But we can look forward to 2023, right? That is the next year. We are out of 2020, right?
This is a very long 2019.
So. I've been signing everything 2021. Numbers no longer matter to me.
They're overrated.
So, yeah, we're having an opportunity to talk about that neighborhood, the school, and then the namesake Patty Houck for our, I guess what we could call our St. Patrick's focused interview today.
Well, why don't we go ahead and just jump into the interview?
Let's do it.
Awesome.
A big thank you to our founding partners at Morrell Inc. Print and Marketing for their ongoing support of community radio. Morrell Inc. is a woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop that since 1993 has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative printing and marketing solutions. Morrell Inc.'s experienced staff creates partnerships with their clients and uses the latest technologies to meet their needs. More information about which of Morrell Inc.'s products, printing, and marketing strategies will best serve your next project and budget can be found at morrellinc.com. That's morellinc.com.
KXRW would like to thank Craft Cannabis, our exclusive cannabis sponsor, for supporting our radio community. Their wide variety of products range from edibles, pre-rolls, concentrates, vapes, CBD topicals, tinctures, and much more. Craft Cannabis for 21 and over now has two locations in Vancouver. The newest shop is on Andreessen Road off Patton Parkway next to Home Depot. The Mill Plain location is in the Heights Shopping Center. Ordering options include online, in-person, curbside, and express window touchless pickup to better serve you. Hours and information available at craftcannabis.com.
This show, we are going to be talking about local St. Patrick's-related history or Ireland-related history with Houck, the historic neighborhood that's up in Vancouver, and also the school. And so we are lucky enough today to have Mina, a Houck historian, and Jill Campbell from the Houck Foundation for our interview subjects, or, the people that we get to torture for the next 45 minutes.
Yes.
So Mina, talk a little bit just about your background. How did you arrive in Vancouver and what's your story?
Well, I'm originally from Oregon, but I got married and moved to Vancouver. And that was like 50 years ago. Wow. And I lived in the same house for 47 years and taught school 2.5 blocks away. So that kind of sums up my heritage.
And your house was in the Houck neighborhood,
it was,
correct?
Yes.
And you taught at the Houck Elementary School.
I taught at the Houck School. My kids went to Houck School. I taught at Houck School. I live in Houck neighborhood.
And how long were you a teacher at the school?
25 years.
Wow.
Yes.
And during that time, you were so instrumental in uncovering and telling the story of Patty Houck, which we'll get to in just a few minutes. But I was incredible the first time I got to meet you when we started discussing Patty Houck history. I thought my chops were amazing. And I got schooled big time.
Oh, yes.
So she continued to be a teacher even after retirement.
Teaching. You can't go away from it.
No, you can't. Not at all.
That's right. Continual learning.
And so, Jill, talk a little bit about your background. How did you get to Vancouver and what's your story?
Born and raised in Vancouver. I'm very, very fortunate to be part of the Campbell family that owns the Columbian newspaper. So we've been very community-minded all of my life. I worked at the paper till I was 31 and then had kids. Was an at-home mom, and then when I left, no, the kids are always there. When I went back into the work area, I decided to go into the nonprofit arena, and so I've known Paul Christensen, who is the founder of the Houck Foundation, most of my life, and an opening came up to be the executive director, and they reached out to me, and I've been thrilled. I've been there for 7 years, and it's been wonderful.
That's incredible. So, Mina, let's get right into it.
Okay.
Tell us, walk us through Patty Houck's history, the person who's the namesake for the neighborhood and the school.
Well, Patty Houck is a very interesting character. He was a 5 foot tall, well-dressed, always smiling Irishman who left a lasting mark in Clark County. He was born in Selvore near Limerick in Ireland. And he went off to the Franco-Prussian War as a stretcher bearer. And he came back without an arm that he lost in battle. Now, that's one side of the history. Now, the other side of the history is that he actually hurt his arm in a fire when he was young. And he ran away from home when he was 16 and never returned.
Oh, wow.
Now, this is, you know, we put the romance on the history, but the real history, I believe, this is what his family says, you know, that he ran away from home and he never returned. So whether you believe the romantic one, which we have, and we also mispronounce his name, they pronounce it Houck.
Houck?
Houck.
Yeah. But I figured it was too late to change everybody's mind about that pronunciation.
Good luck with that one.
Besides, I can't say it very well anyway. Heard in a fireplace accident. After he hurt his arm, supposedly, he joined the hundreds of thousands of Irish who left their country for the West, and he landed a position in a Catholic boys' school in British Columbia.
Near the other Vancouver, the lesser cool one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Doesn't hold a torch to us.
Yeah. And then he received a call to teach at Holy Angels College in Vancouver, or it was called St. James College. And it's right by the St. James Church. He was then offered a position. Then he got all his education and everything, you know, to be able to teach. Then he was offered a position at Columbia School on Kaufman in Vancouver School District. He became a principal, retired, and became a deputy superintendent of schools. And he worked closely with Charles Shumway, who was the superintendent at the time. After he retired, his friends noticed a change in him. His highly starched collars were frayed, his heels run over. His wife Anna wore old dresses. They were quite concerned about him. Then they discovered, when he died in 1925, the reason became clear. In his will, he left $35,000, which was a lot of money back then. He let his friends know that he'd forgone all luxuries to save every cent to endow a school in Clark County to be located near the center of the county, an agricultural and mechanical school. Students and teachers were to be chosen on merit only, not by race or gender. He directed that religious observation and should be held only for those students who desired it. Years passed and no school was built. Battleground High named a building Selvore. That's where he was born. His estate when it was well over $1 million, was turned over to the Community Foundation to help fund the Casey Center.
It's amazing.
And that stands for the Center for Agriculture, Science, and Environmental Education. And the students are chosen by merit only, which would have pleased Hauk, because that was his goal.
And that school is still active to this day.
Yes.
So, you know, when we talk about history, we always, you know, I always say that history ended on March 3rd, 1967, right?
Right.
Everyone knows that.
Everyone.
Because that's
just common knowledge.
We just got to have a hard stop. History's done. So that's not the case, right? Because history still lives on. Patty Houck's legacy. And he was actually, so his name, Patrick Houck, he was born on St. Patrick's Day, right?
Right, exactly. So that's why we celebrate every St. Patrick's Day. And it's not... it's not St. Patrick's celebration. It's Patty Houck's celebration.
Yeah. And you were talking about that romantic story, because they talk about that he went to the, I believe, the Crimean War, I think is what I've heard some stories about. And then he did. He lost his arm. And as he was laying there on a stretcher in writhing pain, realizing his arm was gone, how would he be useful in this world? And then the story I was heard was a priest came in and said, "You should go come to the new world and educate," right? And
the embellishment,
right? There's some embellishment. And then he goes, and that time you talk about in British Columbia, that was a significant chunk of time. He spent a number of years up there. That wasn't just a little pit stop.
No.
And then there is another little story aside. And I don't know if this was injected later, because it's kind of a jab at Seattle. they say in some of the stories that he did a little pit stop, a minor stop in Seattle, and that he wasn't able to teach there. This is one of the stories that we've heard, and he was noted to have said it was because of the number of bed bugs infesting that city. And some other records said it was actually because he didn't have official teaching credentials, so he continued on
going with bed bugs.
Bed bugs,
yeah,
always bed bugs.
Oh, must have been the bed bugs. Yes.
Yeah. Go to Seattle. We have the best bed bugs, right?
The lambs.
So, and then he came to Vancouver, and he spent all those years. And so talk a little bit about why you got interested in Patty Houck's story.
Well, actually, I got interested in the history of the Houck neighborhood first. And I taught, you know, like I had Bluebirds or one of those things, one of those groups. Anyway, so before I actually taught school, I was active in the PTA. And I, you know, got to know the school, got to know the neighborhood better, helped the neighborhood become a historical neighborhood. And so Ina Hennessy, actually she did most of the work. I helped her with collecting all the information about every house in the neighborhood. And of course, now you have all the files.
Yes, we do. Me personally, in my garage. Yeah, just kidding. Yeah. Just kidding. No, at the museum.
Right. I hope so.
I'm gonna edit that out.
But then I got when I started teaching, I thought I'm gonna go do some research, because I didn't really know much about the history of Patrick Houck. So I went to the museum, and there I met Pat Gelada, and she guided me and helped me take copies of pictures, and just told me all these different stories. I just loved it. But that's kind of the way I got interested or introduced to Patty Houck.
And it's so fascinating to hear that journey and that kind of that interest, because what happened that was kind of odd in Vancouver is you have this period of you know, J.P. Kiggins, who another, you know, person related to the Irish roots in Vancouver, and you had Patty Houck. And you had this large Irish community and a lot of history going on in Vancouver. And all the way through kind of 1940s and 50s, there was a lot of presence of these folks. And then this generation kind of passed away and went away. And then their stories started to become murky and faded and a little foggy, right?
Right.
And with Pat Gelada and with you and so many people over through Vancouver, you started to recapture and reintroduce these stories. And so your story is unique in what you found, but it's also common in that kind of recapturing and retelling of the stories that were starting to be lost in Vancouver and Clark County.
Yeah. Yeah. So teaching at the school really opened my eyes. You know, I throughout the years, I did displays and And I, you know, helped with the neighborhood, kept helping with the neighborhood. And it turned the neighborhood really from a rental neighborhood to a homeowner's neighborhood, and which was good. And now it's a historical neighborhood, recognized by the state only.
Well, and it's the only recognized neighborhood in Clark County. It's the only historic neighborhood designated by the state of Washington. And it does. It has an incredible inventory. When you look at Arneda or Carter Park or Shumway or any of those other neighborhoods, they don't have the level of inventory and story behind each and every house that Hauk did. And that's thanks to all the work that that group did to get it on the register.
Right, right. Yeah, Holly Chamberlain, Julie Garver, Ina Hennessy.
Yeah, C.C. Smith.
C.C. Smith, Beth Hovey. Mm-hmm. They were all great group.
And it was people like either from the neighborhood or connected to the neighborhood. It was this really grassroots effort to make that happen. And then from there, that history then connected with the school and Patty Hauk. And again, you talked about, talk a little bit more about the work that you did to promote Patty Hauk's history at the school.
Well, when I came to the school, they really didn't know much about Patty Hauk. So I remember for the, I think it was the 175th year of Vancouver School District, I did a display of Patty Hauk and carted all the pictures and put up the pictures of Patty Hauk in the in wherever I was. I can't remember. But the people, the more I talked about it, the more they became interested. And then, of course, I taught it to my kids. And it was funny. One year during the parade, a reporter came up and asked one of my brand new kids, well, how, what do you think of Patty Hauk? Well, she, like, oh boy, that didn't work very well. Anyway, but I promoted it, you know, through the parade, and we did, I was PTA, and so it just kind of accumulated by then.
That's amazing. So we were just talking about, you know, the history of Patty Hauk, his story, and how you helped uncover that story again, and then how you worked through the school to teach, you know, the kids about his history. Mm-hmm. Now, the parade, that is a very recognizable piece of that neighborhood's mm-hmm. history. Talk a little bit about how the Patty Hauk Parade started.
Well, the Patty Hauk Parade started the year after I started working there. And I thought, how can I bring the community in with the school? Because it was kind of a separate entity, you know, the neighborhood and the school, they just didn't, they didn't work together. They didn't talk to each other. Right. Anyway, so how do you do that? And so I ran to the principal. I said, let's have a parade. And he says, okay. And we had a parade. It went down Franklin Street. And we had one fire engine. Yeah. That's all we had. So the next, and I don't think I ever stopped the traffic or anything.
No.
You know. So anyway, the next year we decided to make it more interactive with the Main Street. So we went down Main Street and, you know, we called the police and set up the buses and all that kind of stuff. And so we went down Main Street and kind of made a circle around there. And the parade's been going ever since until the pandemic's hit. Mm-hmm. Now we haven't had it for 3 years. But people always look forward to it. And it started out really small, but by the time I gave it over to somebody else, it was like huge. That's why I gave it over, because I couldn't teach fifth graders and do the parade at the same time.
Yeah, and you get like elected officials, the Slow Pokes, the local car club. I mean, all these groups now look forward to it, participate in it, and it's a part of our culture now. Yeah. Around what year do you think it started?
Oh, 1990.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's quite a while ago.
Yeah. So, and now the Hauk Foundation actually runs it. And we tried a couple more teachers after I gave it over. And they did okay.
Yeah.
But the foundation does a great job.
Well, and that is a perfect transition over to Jill Campbell and the Hauk Foundation. So Tell us the story of the Hauk Foundation.
The Hauk Foundation has been, we're very excited to be celebrating our 30th year this year. It was started in 1992. Paul Christensen went to Hauk Elementary School. His home, his family home, was right in the backyard of the school, and it still stands today. He noticed around the community kids, families that were going without, that were in some state of poverty, and as he grew up, he knew that he wanted to help do something and have some kind of impact on the neighborhood and the kids and the teachers of the school. So in 1992, he founded the Hauk Foundation, and we are solely supportive of the teachers, the parents, all the children in the school. It's just been a joy to watch it get bigger and more after-school programs. We do more during the day for the teachers and the kids. We provide funds to do everything from hearing aids to curriculum to rental assistance to bringing in healthy snacks in the afternoon. We have 5 after-school programs for the children to enjoy. Music, we find, is very important. Children's brains can grow and thrive with a musical atmosphere, and it creates community, self-esteem, all the things that you would want your child to blossom in. And it has been a joy doing the Hauk Parade. It is now an all-school event. Every classroom creates posters, and they do some history. They learn about some things through history regarding Patty Hauk, and then they create posters and flyers and banners, and they walk the streets of Main Street. It's a couple of hours in the afternoon. We have judges. Everybody goes home a winner. It's a lot of fun. We even had a year where the children did plays, where the kids learned different aspects of Patty Hauk, and then they acted them out. The fifth graders acted them out in front of the rest of the school. It was really neat to watch.
That's incredible. And I know, as a person who works for a nonprofit, you know, we always get the elevator minute, right? We're like, hey, here's what we're doing. Are there any specific stories that you could think of that you'd want to share about the work that you do? Because it's always amazing to be able to tell those, you know, when we get the opportunity to tell an anecdote and actually show the human face. Is there anything you'd want to share?
Thank you, Brad. We have what we call the Healthy Snack Program. And so we have kids at our school that unfortunately have never tasted a strawberry before. Maybe they've never eaten broccoli. So we bring fruits and vegetables in, and the teachers not only use it as a way to re-energize the kids by giving them a healthy snack, but they also use it to talk about what this does for your body and why this is better for you than sugar and candy. We have done programs where we have rock climbing. We have one of our students, Jasmine, who is blind, and she went and she climbed a couple stories high. It was amazing to watch her. She had such self-confidence when she got down from that wall. We've had kids that go out and perform, whether they're drumming or singing, children that have been so quiet and not part of anything, and now they're singing solos in front of their parents and in front of their the rest of the kids. So everything from, we've had families that have been living in cars, and we have raised the funds through our foundation galas and our Sip and Stroll event where we can provide rental housing assistance for them and get them on their feet again. So, yeah, it's amazing. If you go to HaukFoundation.org, you will see some of the videos that we have created that will show you some of the things that we do. And, of course, I'm going to do a shameless plug and talk about the fact that we have a gala coming up. The Hoedown, the Hauk Hoedown, will be in person this year. We're very excited about it. It's May 7th at the Hilton. You can go to HaukFoundation.org and buy your tickets.
Yeah, and it's amazing to be able to see our nonprofits in the community starting to come back, have their events again.
Oh, yeah.
The Hauk Hoedown. Great, great party. And that's where, you know, where I've had a chance to go to year in and year out, and I get to see and hear those stories because you actually bring those stories to the Hauk Hoedown, and you get to see the people who, you know, they need housing assistance, and you're out there to do that. And that's just incredible service to the community. And Paul Christensen, a local treasure in that he grew up. I mean, how amazing. Like, that's like Hollywood tries to manufacture these things, but Paul Christensen is like this hometown kid, went to Hauk, saw the people, his friends, families, people in need. And he went and had this amazing life and this amazing blessing of incredible wealth through his business that he's now just pouring himself and his resources back into the community. Cannot say enough for that. That's just incredible that that's happening. And so I have a question kind of about Patty Houck. So as you work with the foundation, what part of the history or the story of Patty Houck do you feel informs your work as you move forward?
I mean, the Houck Parade is our way of honoring Patty Houck. Yeah. And talking about him, we have pictures of him at school. We talk about him at school, having the kids do plays and learning about history from Patty Houck. So it really helps create a fabric of community, bringing Patty Houck, the Houck Elementary School, and the Houck Foundation all together to celebrate and to just not forget where our roots came from. I think the more that we can tell the kids about what's going on and how it happened, how it came to be, then it's just a richer environment for them to learn at the elementary school.
Well, and how amazing is it to have these like parallel stories of this kid from Ireland, right? Born on St. Patrick's Day. And he goes, moves through life, meets adversity, loses his arm, travels to a new place that's unknown, has to work his way and find things, gets into a place, works for the community, works for the kids, saves all of the wealth that he can, even goes with threadbare, you know, clothing, and then gives it back for the benefit mm-hmm. of his community and the kids. And then you have this parallel story of Paul Christensen, mm-hmm. a kid from the community, rising up, finding his way, and then returning back to his community. And I mean, that's the Casey Center and the Houck Foundation seem like parallel stories in this book of legacy that both Patty Houck and Paul Christensen are a part of. It's just incredible. And the family legacy continues on because you were able to actually meet his family at one point. Is that right?
Yes, I actually, they came here, oh gosh, I don't remember what year they came, but they were here for the parade, and they were actually grand marshals. So it was Liam and his wife, Kathleen Horan. And then when I retired, I went over and visited them and stayed with them for a week and actually got to go have dinner at Patty Houck's residence where he grew up.
Oh, wow.
And I met his a niece and nephew. So there's probably, he was probably their great, great, great uncle. So, but yeah, the house was, sat on 11 acres, 100 acres, excuse me. And they farmed it and they lived there all their life. There was brother and sister. And it was just a really neat experience. House was little. It was all made of stone. And it had stairs going up and stairs going down. And there was like a sunken parlor, which I think was the kitchen at one time. I didn't like their food, though. It wasn't very good. Although, don't tell them, I'd never complain. But I have to tell you, you know, you were talking about the kids not having experiences. One year, during the parade, I brought in farm animals. So I brought in the main two big things were llamas and horses. Llamas and horses do not get along.
Oh, really?
I discovered. But anyway, those kids, they got to pet the llamas and they got to actually sit on the horse. That's neat. And they just loved it because a lot of those kids never even touched a horse or even mm-hmm. seen a horse. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. So that was a really good experience.
Yeah, we have the Slowpokes have been so great, gracious, and they let the kids get in their antique cars.
Oh, yeah.
And pretend like they're driving. And the parade has grown so much. We have bagpipe players, and we have the fire station and the police, and we have officials. We have antique cars. We've got all the kids, 300 kids from the school. So, yeah, it's a wonderful event that's grown so much since the beginning.
And what day is that happening this year?
It's always on St. Patrick's Day.
It's on St. Patrick's Day. There it is.
Yes, to honor him. Yes.
Not this year. three years without.
Yeah, it will happen. This year. Yeah, it will happen next March.
Next March.
And we're going to have a big celebration,
huge.
Right?
Huge.
Bigger than ever, right?
Yes, bigger than ever.
So Maya, in closing, we just got a few minutes left. Is there just one thing you'd want to leave with people concerning what you've learned about Patty Houck and that legacy?
The legacy of Patty Houck is the Casey Center, basically.
Yeah.
You know, the $35,000 that actually grew into $2
million. Wow.
And now they give away $100,000 in scholarships every year.
Wow.
So, you know, that's his legacy. But, of course, there's the neighborhood, the foundation, the used to be a swimming pool.
Yep.
Not anymore, though. Let's say the school. What did I say? So anyway, all those names out there.
Yeah.
That says his name. One that people are going to remember.
And these pieces were so important to the community, the neighborhood, the school, the pool, all these things that they attached this monumental figure who gave to education, who gave to kids, who gave to his community,
right,
as a part of his legacy. They saw these as reflections, which is right. History understanding at the best.
Yeah. And also Patty Houck was, he was very active politically too.
Mm.
He was a Republican and very religious,
mm-hmm.
but he stood out in the community.
Wasn't he a mayor? Wasn't he one of our mayors?
He was a deputy superintendent.
Yep.
And it wasn't just Vancouver School District. It was like Clark Community. I don't know.
Yeah, there's all kinds of different fun functions back in the day.
Right. Mm-hmm. It was different. But, he worked with Shumway really closely.
Yeah, one of these days we talk about Shumway, too. There's some good stuff there. Actually, the Vancouver School of Arts and Academics is housed in what used to be the Shumway School, so we should we should look them up.
Right? We did, actually. Yeah.
You know, Arts Month or something.
Bring them
all. Yeah. Well, Shumway and Houck were very good friends. And so during the Halloween... Maria Wrightson and I, we got together and we did the ghost stories.
Mm.
And I was Mrs. Houck and she was Mrs. Shumway. And so we talked our way, you know, down Officers Row and all that.
That's cool.
And did ghost stories. That's cool. So that was interesting. That was fun.
So, Jill, in closing, is there anything you want to leave the audience with related to the Houck Foundation?
Well, Every week I meet with Paul Christensen and I meet with my board, and what they ask me is, what can we do for the kids and what can we do for the teachers and the parents? And so that's what we do. And so far, all the things that have been asked of us, we've been able to say yes to. And that's because of the wonderful community that gives to us. So just know that the money that you give us goes to the programs. And we can't do it without you. So we love what we do. We hope to do it for another 30 years and then some. And we hope to see you at the hoedown.
A big thank you to Vancouver's own Kiggins Theatre for supporting our radio community. Our historic Kiggins Theatre has a long tradition of showing movies for our community. 85 years. Kiggins currently features First Run Big Studio and Art House films, along with classic movie revivals. Check out their live events, and you can even book the theater for a private party or a public event. Go to KigginsTheater.com to see how you can rediscover the joy of going out for movie night again. Showtimes, booking information, and more at KigginsTheater.com.
Coming up April 15th at the KXRW Ballroom, KXRW and Six Studio presents New Waves Northwest, live and local. Join hosts JT and Ego as they showcase local musical talent. There will be vendors, snacks, drinks, with a full lineup of music and entertainment to enjoy. Purchase your tickets today online at nwnwlive.eventbrite.com. That's nwnwlive.eventbrite.com. You can also find more information about the show at kxrw.fm as well as sick-studio.com. That's sick-studio.com.
All right, so this is a special show because we are giving you extra interviews, because the interviews are going to be to the
Power of Two.
Brilliant. I think we harmonized on that.
It was amazing.
I Grammys are probably in our future.
Sonic Delights.
So for the second interview, I was at home. I was thinking about what are some of the greatest radio sequels ever?
That's a good question. Yeah. What are those greatest? Yeah. Because I'm prepared for this question.
Yeah, yeah. None. Because I don't think there are radio sequels.
That is so true.
Yeah.
We have just discovered an entire different market.
We are on the frontier of a whole new precipice. Like a whole new...
Yeah. Nothing but innovation.
That's all we are. That's all we do.
Remember that, folks.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we have the second half of Jeff Williams' interview.
We do. Up. Jeff was amazing. He came and he sat with us for quite a while, gave us some really cool history, and now we get to hear about his K-Van portion, the portion that talks about the radio history local. So this is really incredible to be able to just have this part two with Jeff Williams, and again, we're really grateful to be able to have interviewed him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I guess without further ado, let's get to number two. All right, we are back as promised.
So you were at K-Van for a number of years, and people who are listening to this, you know, through the intertubes and on the radio may not be familiar with K-Van. Can you give, from what you know, a little bit of background of K-Van and then talk about your time there?
Okay, well, K-Van used to be K-Van has jumped around. Originally, it was at 9:10 a.m., and it went on the air, I think, in 1939, and you guys had the display in the museum. I remember seeing that.
Yep.
And 20 years later, they became a top 40 station because they saw this market for teenagers, and they went after it. And so from 1959 to 1977, they were a top 40 station at 9:10. Mm-hmm. And then the guy that owned him got in trouble with the FCC, and they went dark, and then they sold it, and it went everything from a classical station to an all game show station, and they did a bunch of different experimentations.
Made the rounds.
Yeah, made the rounds. And so, meanwhile, if you remember KCNR at the middle of your dial at 97.1, the same guy that owned Kissin bought them, mm-hmm. as I remember. And they were playing oldies on the AM at that time at 9:10. And they thought, well, why don't we put it on FM too? So that was the big time of simulcasting. You put on your FM what you have on your AM.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how 97.1 Kissin FM, the station you grew up with, became very good. I mean, mm-hmm. it became very popular. And it's interesting, every once in a while I'll go online to check the Nielsen, which used to be called the Arbitron Reports, and you can go into each market and see what the stations are. And the only downside is you don't see what the prime demographics are in that, mm-hmm. because they just give you 6 to 54 or whatever it is. And I think the prime demos are now something like 18 to 44, because mm-hmm. those are the people who are spending the money, not gathering it, but they're spending it. Even if they don't have it, they're spending it.
Yeah.
And those are the people advertisers want to reach. And so I all these markets I live near, and I listen to stations, or I worked at them, or I worked in the market. What's interesting right now, one of the biggest formats is either news talk, because of all the political stuff going on, and classic hits, which is all the top 40 hits from 19, well, let's see, they move it up 10 years every decade. So it's like
classic changes.
Yeah, yeah, and it depends. It depends. 106.7 is the 60s, well, I say the 70s, 80s, and 90s now.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But the old Kissin, you know, has been put back on the air by guys who love Kissin, and it's at 95.1. It's a low-power FM,
mm-hmm.
and you can get it really well in Vancouver. And I know that they're competition for this station, but you'll hear all the music that was ever played on the original Kissin.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, from 1959 to 1979, let's say. And they don't do too much disco. I mean, it's like they don't go along and bump the decades off at the low end. They keep that same three decades or two decades, whatever it is, intact. And it's kind of fun because they don't play just the top 10 songs that got the top 10. They're playing anything that was ever played. And it's fun, you know, and as a disc jockey, you know, you see a lot of these songs that come in and you listen to them, but they never go very far. Right. You know, Casey Kasem, it would have been number 30 to number 40. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are songs you forget about. And it was so nice to hear them again. Especially for me, at the age I am, the early 60s stuff that I like that you don't hear anymore, you know? And so It's been a nice, refreshing go-to station, you know. And so, but yeah, it's interesting just seeing how this all eventuates. And yeah. Radio is allegedly one of those disappearing platforms. newspapers and TV stations, local TV stations.
I think its death has been proclaimed many times.
That's true.
So you were saying K-Van went through kind of this mixed bag for a while, and then it went prog rock for a little bit.
Well, yeah. Right? Actually, the call letters went prog rock.
Okay.
When Kissin' came out in the year in 59, K-Van went to 1480.
Okay.
They were at 1480, and they were at a station that used to be called KPVA or something like that. And it was Portland, Vancouver, or Portland, Vancouver. KPVA, and when they went there, then that station was playing country music. I think that's about, well, Willie Nelson had come and gone, because I think he left in 55 or 56.
Yeah, because he was on K-Van in the...
Yeah. And yeah. They were kind of, I mean, I've seen a friend gave me some, what do you call them, little portfolio things of all the personalities on the country station.
Yeah.
And there was a Martha Ford, and there was Little Shorty, and there was Willie Nelson. I mean, these guys had fan clubs. They played in their own bands.
Yeah.
And so that lasted. And then they went back to beautiful music along the way, or MOR, what we used to call MOR. And when I came to town in 1980, they just switched, and they started playing top 40 music.
K-Van did.
Well, 1480 did.
1480, yeah.
And they gave up the K-Van letters because where I was at KGAR, KVAN was too close to KGAR.
Oh, okay.
And the FCC said, no, your call letters are too identical. So they weren't allowed to do that. So what happened was they became KAAR, and those call letters sat there for about a year and a half, and our people decided K-Van is the original radio station here. When people think about local radio, it is KVAN, K-Van. That's what it is. And so we had been playing country music, when I got there, they had been a top 40 station, and they decided to capture the urban country, or whatever you want to call urban cowboy crowd. And so they had been playing country music, but then we realized we were country also, because there were only two other country stations in the market, and they were both AMs, and so we could compete and have local news and local sports and capture the Clark County audience. We didn't care about anything that went on in Portland. I mean, people would listen to them, yeah, but everything that was content was all Clark County or Washington State-oriented content.
That's amazing.
It is. It is. And it was the genius of Gary Capps that said, well, why can't we do that? You know? Right. And so
it's like hyper-local.
Yeah, hyper-local, exactly what it was. And as I found out, and as radio evolved its way, and as we all did, people don't listen to a radio because of geography. They listen to it because it gives them the information and the entertainment that they like or they want to hear. And so K-Van was country. Up until 1986, and then overnight we switched to this. We hired a consultant who said, there's three country stations on FM over in Portland. Are you thinking about the same way you thought back in 10 years ago? We thought, well, no, you know, we can't compete with that. You know, we have a 10,000 watt signal, but we can't compete with that. So anyway, we switched to an MOR format, and it actually made more people come who were listening to our local news. They didn't dial away. They were listening to the music that they liked to listen to. So that worked out pretty good. But then the station was sold in 1989. A group out of San Francisco bought it and decided they had just purchased, Gary Capps had just sold him his station 106.7 that he had bought from Bruce Engel, who was this businessman who was going to put up wood mills and wood processing plants.
Okay.
It was in the wake of the Spotted Owl stuff. And anyway, he became quite famous, but he was kind of he wouldn't stay in one place very long. So we ended up selling it to these guys, Gary Capps was in his taxi cab with these guys going back to the station. He says, well, I guess I'll go back to my station and run my AM. And they said, well, you have an AM? And he says, yeah. And he says, well, we'll give you $500,000 for it. So he took it, and these guys were running the station. And the first thing they did was they took us off the air and simulcasted the FM, which they had gone classic rock trying to compete with KGON at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of us left except for three of us, and I wasn't one of the three.
Yeah.
But they hired me back to do the public affairs because Jolene Unseld, who was the congresswoman at the time, was starting to rattle some sabers because we were the only source of Clark County news, it was very important, Clark County news and politics. I mean, she hired me right away to run her media campaign and get on all the stations in Portland. And so all the public affairs stations. And we went everywhere, you know. And that was successful for her. She won the next election. But that said, they stayed. They switched their format from classic rock, the FM did, to a hot AC, as they call it now. Mm-hmm. And then they went bankrupt. And then a guy I worked with when I was a KRDR, Don Koss, came up and got a lease on the station, lease with an intent to buy.
Okay.
And then about 1991, I ran into Dick Granger at the Rotary. I don't know if they still do it. The East Rotary Club had their Rose Garden, it's the Hall of Fame for anybody who's achieved any notoriety or success in Clark County.
Yeah.
Well, I went to one of their events. I think it was where Mary, his wife, was being honored. Mm-hmm. And he walks up to me and he says, hey, you know, I'm thinking of buying that radio station. Would you run it for me? And I said, sure. Because I wasn't in radio at that time, except doing a public affairs program, which they phased out when they went bankrupt. So anyway, 3 years later, we put it on the air again, and that was the second incarnation of reincarnation of the radio station that I was involved with. And we were a Clark County information station. We were all news. And then Dick wanted to put on conservative talk because he thought it needed to be balanced with all the other talk. Mm-hmm. And so we put that on. And we did San Francisco 49er football games the first weekend because Seahawks have been taken by somebody else in Portland because they were a hot commodity then.
Yeah.
And so we did that. And then after a while, I just decided I wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. So I gave my notice. Pam Atherton was working with me, and she replaced me. And I got on with my life, and she got on with hers. And I had a marketing company I wanted to beef up and a couple other things I wanted to do. Leadership Clark County was one of them. Proud class member of 97. After a while, until I ran into Scott Tom and said I'd like to get back into radio, that was what I did. I did my marketing company. I did a lot of political marketing, which nobody was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much what you promise or what you say. It's what one word or what two words describe who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you hang on to those words through every piece of advertising because people are going to see you in the Columbian. They have those little business builder ads.
Yeah.
And you put them in reverse and you put the one word in a picture of the guy and then all the little necessary information. But I had one client where we won four different elections one night and it worked really well.
So you were at KVAN and obviously they're still playing music. They were hyper local here in Clark County. And then you were doing some of the news segments. And we had a chance before we did actually an interview for the Museum Speaker Series
mm-hmm.
where we chatted about some of the folks you interviewed in conjunction with the Clark County Fair and other musical events. So one of the people that we talked about, and let's cover that again, is Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah. It was staggering because Bob Songer, who was the undersheriff, comes over and pulls. I was the news director by then. I became the news director in 1982 when the guy who had been moved on to sell signs. And I was the news director from 82 till 89 till they shut the station down. But the fun part of just being there at that radio station was getting to spend 10 days a year all together out at the fair. And there were so many stories and so many people and so many celebrities. And I was getting ready to do something. And I guess Johnny Cash was already on the billboard. You know, he was already being billed to be there. And somebody drives in with this DARE truck. And DARE, what does DARE stand for?
Drug abuse resistance education.
Okay, you guys were there. You were there. You were the target.
we had all the stickers and the shirts.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Johnny Cash came before he went on, and Bob Songer, the undersheriff, and Frank Anacoa, the sheriff, they got together, and it was. I've still got pictures of it, you know. And as you know, I got the interview with Johnny.
Yeah.
And just a real down-to-earth guy. I mean, here's a guy, if you've ever watched Ken Burns' documentary on country music, here was a guy that was a real druggie. And he fell in love with his eventual wife, but she wouldn't marry him until he got off drugs. And that took a while. And, you know, he was so adamant about getting kids off drugs. And you know, he and a bunch of other guys, Hank Williams was celebrated for being, I mean, he died in the back seat of his car on New Year's Eve or Christmas Day of 1953. You know, I mean, it was amazing that, you know, he'd tried to get off drugs and he couldn't. And I think that's part of the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to do. You're in a car and you're driving 100 or 200 miles to the next gig. And what do you do during all that time? Or if you're on a bus, what do you do?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I can understand that. But the thing about Johnny, he was very humble, and he was very sincere, and he was adamant about getting kids off drugs. And I remember looking into his eyes, and the thing that amazed me was he had these kind of like bags around his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not being critical, it's just saying what I observed. And his eye was in there trying to get out, you know, to look at me. And I thought, wow, I mean, these must be long-term consequences from drugs. I just assumed that. But I certainly didn't disrespect him. He was a hero, and it still is a hero to a lot of people. But he fought his way back. And he's been on TV, on Get TV, on Sunday nights here. And you get to see him the way he was when he finally climbed out and was Johnny Cash. And his music is so inclusive.
Right.
I mean, he has a lot of soul groups. He has a lot of folk groups. Anybody, you know, not just country people or country crossover people, it was anybody who was a successful musician.
Well, and later in his life, he did like albums where he covered like Soundgarden.
Yeah.
You know, Nine Inch Nails, like bands that like we grew up listening to.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, thank you for taking the time. Thank you for what you did for our local radio. We really appreciate it.
New segment time.
Yes, it is. See, we're figuring this out, folks.
It's slowly.
New segment time.
It is. It's like we're just drawing components out of a hat at random.
So this new segment is one that it requires your engagement, folks. So as you're driving or sitting or whatever you're doing listening to this show, we now need you to engage with us.
So is it fair to say that if the segment doesn't work out, it's not us?
It is never us.
Yeah, we did our part.
There's only Radio Gold streaming sonically from the speakers across this area.
It would be the listeners not participating.
Absolutely. Participation is imperative in this moment.
It's mandatory.
Mandatory.
Mandatory fun. Okay.
Mandatory fun.
you will love it.
So what we're going to do is we're going to tell you two historical stories, and one of them is going to be true, and one of them is going to be a lie. And then what we want you to do is jump on our Facebook page over the next week and you let us know, or the next month, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Because I know how often we come on the radio. So anyways, you jump on our Facebook page and we're going to have a little post for this, and you all can decide which one is the history and which one is the lie.
I mean, obviously yours is the lie, but we'll get into that later.
Well, that's because I'm a well-known liar.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to start off. I'm going to tell you right now, yes, this one is the true one. And when I first read it, though, I was like, no, this is not the true one. And I had to go back and reread it, do a little bit of research. Turned out to be true, and it is baffling my mind.
See, folks, this is exactly what a liar would say.
Oh, is it? What would a liar say? This insert story. Okay, 2001, June 2001, Laura Buxton, okay, cool last name, released a helium-filled balloon during celebration for her grandparents' gold wedding anniversary in a park in downtown Vancouver. So it doesn't say which park, but I'm going to assume it's Marius or Short, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is back in June of 2001. Attached to the balloon was her name, her address, and a note asking the finder to write back. Okay, some time passes. 10 days, so not too long. So 10 days later, she receives a reply. The balloon had been found by another Laura Buxton 140 miles away. Not only did they share the same name, but they also owned a black Labrador and a guinea pig. Both of them. And so here's the thing, though. So I read it, and I was like, there's no way that's true. But in all fairness, when I went to UW-Tacoma, there was another one with my name there as well, which is weird because, like, my last name is not common.
No.
And it was same first name, same last name. The only reason I found out is because they got in trouble, and a note came to me in the mail. And I was like, wait, I didn't do this. So I know it's possible to have namesakes out there.
Likely story.
Yeah.
Likely story.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hear what you came up with.
All right. So this one goes back to the early 20th century. There was a guy by the name of J.J. Beauregard. And Mr. Beauregard lived up on a house here in Vancouver on Main Street. You can actually – it's a Thai restaurant now, so you can actually go and have food inside of what used to be his house.
Nice.
And he was a pretty wealthy dude, and so he was able to afford a nice car, and he had a pretty big business in downtown Vancouver. And one day, he decides he's going to go on a trip. So he ends up taking himself on a leisure trip to California. And at this time, he can drive around in his car. And this is the teens, so, you know, cars are kind of a brand new thing. So he's, you know, driving through California, ends up driving into a desert. And as he's driving through this desert, his car starts to act up a little bit. And eventually, his radiator starts to boil over. And then finally, it boils dry, and the car slowly comes to a stop. And so here we're thinking, okay, this is the end of Mr. Beauregard.
Right, he's done.
He's done. He's out of here. Game over. End of story, folks. Just kidding. So anyways, he remembers that on this trip, he had secured himself a watermelon at some point. And so he decided to take that watermelon. He puts it into a bucket that he had in his car. He crushes it up and gets all of the liquid kind of moving around. Takes that liquid, pours it into the car. And folks, this is from a news article, so I don't know anything about how automobiles work and if you can use sugar water to drive them. So please do not blow up the Twitters with all of this. This is from the news article. And he ends up pouring it into his radiator, getting his car up back and running, goes to a service shop, gets it all fixed back up, and returns home safely. And the only reason we know this story is because it was published in the newspaper, and the title of this article was Melon Saves Motorist.
No, I'm not buying it. Nope. You thought of this on your drive here in your car. That's why it's stained.
I mean, these watermelon stains all over my shirt have nothing to do with
the fact that my Toyota Prius no longer runs.
Yeah, it's true. It is a problem.
Well, there you go. You know, I guess we don't get to judge this. It's not our job. We did our part.
We did.
So now we need you guys. We need you guys to go ahead and go forward. Go on to our Facebook post, or onto our Facebook group. Go on to KXRW's pages. Put your comments for the answers in there. And I think we'll probably let them know next month.
We will, absolutely. And we'll have another One History and a Lie.
Please join us on May 7th for the 31st year of Walk Run for the Animals. Help the Humane Society for Southwest Washington support animals in need. The route begins in Esther Short Park, heading north through historic downtown Vancouver. The event is from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. and features activities in the park, vendor villages, and route stops with giveaways from local businesses and sponsors. Details and registration information can be found at hssw.org/walk. That's hssw.org/walk. Community Growth Radio, known as CGR, is a free online audio streaming service based out of Vancouver, Washington. CGR Radio offers news, information, and community programming that is very target-specific for the blind, visually impaired, the disabled, the 50-plus, and veterans by providing timely subjects from health, retirement, and finance that affect the above-intended audience, plus offering old-time radio, nostalgia, book magazine, and newspaper readings. If you know someone who may benefit from this kind of information and entertainment, Google CGR Radio, that's CGR Radio, or call 360-583-7748.